Shabbat Shalom. We got a number of new babies. I guess babies by definition are new, but still newer babies in here and some kids as well. And so I want to dedicate this talk to the world we'd like to build for them. I'm sure some of us have paid attention to the news as Roseanne Barr went from a show with top ratings to a persona non grata in society very, very quickly. I want to examine that because it seems like our society just has an on and off switch, that we go from 0 to 60, that we don't have a process for how we talk about how we should talk. And this parsha in particular is a very rich section, Bahalotecha, for how we need to talk about the failure of speaking with one another and about restoration back into society. And so in that way, I think that Judaism has a lot of ways in which it can inform our society. So let's drop backwards for those who may have less familiarity with this section of Bahalotecha. But what we find here is that Aaron and Miriam, Moses' siblings, are talking smack about his wife. And they say specifically, he married a Cushite woman. So a Cushite woman is biblical language for someone from Ethiopia, someone with black skin. What we seem to hear right at this moment is an insult by two of the Jewish people's central leaders against Moshe's wife, because of the color of her skin. And the Torah is very quick to respond to this, right? And gives us some remarkable lessons right off of there, because the cloud withdrew from the tent. The tent of meeting is where God would meet with Moses. It represented God's presence among the people. So as soon as this phrase is uttered, this racist epitaph, God departs from the Jewish people. So that's sort of a pretty strong notion of the Torah's perspective. And then Miriam is immediately stricken with a white scale skin ailment. It's often translated as leprosy, but leprosy and biblical leprosy are completely different things. And Aaron seems to know that what he has done is wrong, because just a little bit later, he says, and Aaron said to Moses, "O my Lord, account not to us the sin that we committed in our folly." So there is recognition of what has been done and a request for forgiveness from, interesting, not from Zipporah, but from Moshe. I hope that this section of Torah is disturbing to all of us. And it should be disturbing in a few different arenas. For one, the Torah explicitly introduces and forces us to reckon with an incident of racism. Second, I think we have to ask why Miriam and Aaron, two of our greatest leaders, why are they the ones who were presented with? And specifically, why does it seem that Miriam gets dinged more for her action and suffers a greater punishment than does Aaron? And finally, and this is what brings us back to our children, our society, and to Roseanne, what are the limits of speech in our society? How do we construct a speech ethic that will be focused on justice, compassion, and also help educate us along the way, so that rather than going from 0 to 60, we have an envelope by which we can raise everyone else? Well, thankfully, the Torah does deal with this racism incident immediately, and we hear in the Torah no brooking of this at all. There is an immediate response from God, and that provides us some relief, I think, from the anxiety and the disturbing part of this. And I think I'll just add into there one of the more profound teachings from one of the great 20th century Jewish prophets, Abraham Joshua Heschel, who famously once said that racism is an eye disease. Racism is an eye disease. And what I think he meant by that is that when the eye cannot see another human being created in God's image, then it is suffering a form of blindness. I think it's more internal as well, but Heschel gives us a phrase of such power to carry with us and to remind us that when we look at someone and fail to see them, that we have a failing, an illness that needs treatment. So that is that first part. The second is not as easy. Why does Miriam get hit so much harder than Aaron? And it could just well be that there is a dark patriarchal element here. The traditional commentators try to wrestle with it. And we certainly know a dark part of the Jewish tradition is a notion that women should not be listened to or heard, and that is in the tradition. But we don't have an answer that can satisfy. And so I leave that to you as a piece of difficult Torah that we still have to wrestle with. And that's important also. Not every moral dilemma ought to be answered with simple solutions. But what I really want to speak about is this notion of a proper speech ethic. And I think it's no mistake that the Torah highlights this incident with Aaron and with Miriam. We know again and again that our tradition does not raise up our heroes and our leaders to some impossible place for the rest of us to get to. Elliot Dorff, using a line from pedagogy, talks about accessible models, meaning that when we look at Miriam and Aaron, people who are so exemplary in so many other areas of their life, we also see that they are flawed human beings, limited human beings, carrying subconscious or conscious biases, and yet they are us as well. And that's really essential, because I think part of what happens when we go from our 0 to 60 culture in dealing with an issue is that we want to eliminate the entirety of a person by a single episode. And that doesn't actually make for good public policy, because it doesn't raise up the offending person. There's not that sense of restoring them to society having learned or grown. So what are the boundaries of speech and the limitations on that within Judaism? Because I think we all know this is one of the central dilemmas of our age. We see it again and again. And on the one hand, we have fake news. We have this notion that if I assert something, that's sufficient. It doesn't matter whether there's any correlation to the actual world. And we've come to accept it. And everybody and every side of the spectrum has their own fake news sources which speak to us compellingly. So part of speech, proper speech, ought to be a notion that we really ought to base our speech on facts and state and own when it's just an opinion that we're carrying. There's another aspect to our speech in the society, from that one hand where anything goes, anything I say goes because my side is right. And that is a sort of culture of authoritarianism, where we have coded speech cues that exist within all of our little silos. And I enjoy, it's a stress test for me, I enjoy reading Farley from left and right, because you begin to see the coded language that different segments of our society use, and that are not actually there to help raise everyone up, but to draw a boundary about who's in and who is out. And I think we also know how terribly fragmented our society is as well. And I view each of these as excesses in our attempt to figure out how we can speak to one another. The final aspect I think we all know we struggle with is social media, which Ed Krauss recently said is neither social nor media. And this is the way that censorship works in a democracy. In the Soviet era, you censored people by shutting down their words completely. And in our era, we overload society with a complete mass of every single voice and opinion with no responsibility behind that, so that nothing real ultimately can be heard over the chatter. And each of these things are decaying our public body, our civics. So how has Judaism dealt with it? And of course, Judaism had an advantage in that, despite our diversity, how spread out we are over the world, there's a way in which it was a unified culture with a common telos, a common sense of where the good is that we are working for. And that's a lot harder in multi-ethnic and polarized America. But Judaism really, and out of this section, begins to develop, and Rambam talks about it, our laws not only of rechilut, of gossip or slander, in which we say something false about someone, but also our rules of Lashon Hara, where we refrain even from saying things that are true. Tzipora was a Cushite woman. And what Miriam and Aaron said, in other words, was factually true. And even that is not sufficient. So there's a tension even in the Jewish ethics of this. Because simultaneously, while we see what's happened to Roseanne, we have watched case and case and case of those who use silence and their power to afflict and take advantage of those with less power. So does a speech ethic in which we refrain from saying something just because it's true, and certainly because it's false, mean that we can't actually ensure that people are held to account? 100% not. And in Judaism, that is, we have an obligation to speak to people initially privately. We have a tremendous notion of preserving human dignity, but also of calling people into account. And that itself may not be sufficient for us. So the final part of Jewish speech laws that I want to talk about is that we are allowed to publicly share information, which is true and harmful, if there is a sufficiently powerful reason. And the classic example given in the Jewish codes is if somebody's actually looking for a job, you can't gild the lily. You can't, in your recommendation, say more about them than is true, or even leave out material aspects of that person in which their performance would be weaker. And that is very different from American society, where, I'm looking at my one-time human resources wife, where many corporations, if you call up, would say, I can only confirm that Harold worked here from the years 2002 to 2006, or where we'll only say nice things. Judaism, in this case, because of how, if we're going to build a common speech ethic, we also need to build in accountability. And so in those cases, you are required, even in America, where you could put yourself at some jeopardy, to tell the truth in that circumstance. And if you feel you can't, then you should politely tell the person asking for a recommendation, you know, I don't think I'm the right person to do that. Throughout our tradition, standing at the forefront from the very beginning, it's a notion that we all know, that we are created B'Tselem Elohim, that we're created in the divine image, and that Kevod HaBriot Doche Et HaShabbat, that we have to preserve the dignity of all human beings. And so when we go out into the world and when we speak to people, if we have that notion in front of us, if we remove the illness of racism and hatred and bigotry and closed-mindedness by which those who are not like us in whatever definition we are using, and put first and foremost that sense of the divinity of that person, if we can see them in that, then I believe the speech ethic that we can build will be one which is not punitive, but restorative. It's Miriam who is sent out of the camp for 7 days to think about what she did, but is then brought back into the camp afterwards. We're very good at very quickly kicking people out of the camp or avoiding those who need to be reprimanded from receiving any punishment at all. Somewhere in between those lies a speech culture that can raise and restore America. And it's not going to happen by a law. It's going to happen by each of us and how we go about speaking to one another and the harder work we do of teaching us and ourselves the dignity for everyone. Like that prayer for our country, the responsibility begins with us, but if we take it on, our actions will ripple out and improve a very dark time in which we live. Shabbat Shalom.